Welcome to the EU Startups Podcast. Sit back and enjoy the show hosted by Marcin Lewandowski.
Hey EU Startups, if you're running a startup like me, you have more than enough on your plate. So when a prospect asks if your company is ISO 27001 or SOC 2 compliant, you're probably thinking, how the heck are we going to do this? We don't have the time, we don't have the manpower, and we definitely don't have the know-how. That's where Sitel comes in. With our automated platform and in-house expert to manage the entire process for you, you'll get compliant super fast. Compliance has never been easier.
So if you need help with compliance, visit sitale.ai/EU startups. That's sitale.ai/EU startups for $1,000 off your first framework. Hey everyone, this is Marcin Lewandowski and you're listening to the EU Startups podcast. My guest today is Nicole Butner. I'm not sure if I pronounced your surname right. Maybe you can correct me, Nicole, if not. Nicole is the founder and CEO of Mirantix Momentum and founding partner at Mirantix Capital. Welcome to the show, Nicole. It's such a pleasure to have you here.
Well, thank you very much, Marcin. Thanks for the invitation.
Amazing. So let's dive right into it. I would like to talk to you about the AI revolution that is happening. And let's talk about, I don't know, if we are getting it right. So maybe... If AI had a seat at the table in Davos, what would it say about how we are handling its evolution?
Yeah, so I mean, at Mirantix, we organize the AI House in Davos every year, and we're getting together the global, let's say, AI community there to discuss exactly those issues. Mm. And I think my main takeaway was the risk, like, we're very tilted towards risk. I mean, I'm based in Europe and I feel the discussion is very tilted towards risks and not mm-hmm. enough on the rewards of AI.
Yeah.
And I feel if we continue focusing our people's attention on risks instead of opportunities, the biggest risk will be not implementing AI, which is almost... Yeah, it was probably, in my opinion, even worse than like getting some things wrong.
Yeah.
So that's where what I feel like the and I think the second part is a lot around Gen AI and getting value out of it. Uh-huh. So we've seen a lot of discussion around large language models and generative AI, and on a corporate level, which is where my organization, Mirantix Momentum, is focused uh-huh. on. So a lot of the connections into deep industry. Some of the players are not seeing the rewards yet, so they're having difficulty translating this technological revolution into a business P&L, let's say. And so that's what we help them with, and that's a lot of what the discussion also focused around.
Uh-huh. And Nicole, you've seen AI from both an investor's and a builder's perspective. What's one widely held belief about AI that you think is completely wrong?
I would say that adoption will happen all by itself. So we're having all these discussions around how AI will displace jobs and so on. And I think if we've seen one thing over the last decade or so is that just because it's technologically possible, the ripple down effect into actual organizations will be much slower. Hmm. And so until technologies actually reach organizations, there's a lot of touchy-feely stuff happening mm-hmm. important governance discussions next to what's technologically relevant. I also think, to be honest, this focus on AGI mm-hmm. is somewhat artificial general intelligence, superhuman intelligence and so on, is a bit exaggerated because I think that's not what we need to solve some very pressing and relevant issues mm-hmm. for economies, for societies and for the planet. A lot of the applications that will solve these issues don't need AGI. So I think mm-hmm. that's a little bit of an interesting, more philosophical debate to get into mm-hmm. actually than a pressing, super important topic right now.
Nicole, so As you said, you're based out of Europe. Maybe let's talk about Europe a bit. Mm-hmm. If you had a magic wand and could instantly fix one thing about Europe's AI and deep tech ecosystem, what would it be?
One wish. So I think the biggest problem for Europe is storytelling.
Mm.
We have so many amazing ingredients in Europe to build great deep tech and AI startups. And that's why I'm very excited to be an investor here. We have exceptional talent. A lot of the innovations and papers and academic breakthroughs are driven by researchers educated and stemming from Europe. We have very interesting proprietary data sets to build AI applications on. Mm-hmm. We have actually a lot of capital in Europe. We're not directing it towards maybe venture and growth startup, but we have the capital. We know this. We're one of the biggest market, worldwide. Mm-hmm. So I think what we really have is a storytelling problem. We're not telling the story about European tech in a self-confident enough way. That's my honest opinion. We're not framing it in a way that we're aware of these strengths and maybe also not creating policies that are making optimal use of it.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, our ecosystem is actually a great strength. I mean, what Norentix has been building in Berlin with the AI campus, what others are building around Europe, right? What you're doing here, connecting people around the EU. We have an incredibly strong ecosystem. We just need to tell the story in a much more confident way. And I think in this polarizing world that will become even more interesting and even more important.
I love the take. I actually 100% agree. You know, Europe has world-class AI talent. It's just, and they're like, even though they do, and, you know, it struggles to kind of create AI giants, or generally, like when you look at the past, it struggles to kind of compete versus US. Is it a funding problem, a mindset problem, or something else entirely? But I like the storytelling take. So, Nicole, imagine it's 2035. What's a surprising way AI is shaping our everyday lives that few people see coming?
Yeah, I mean, to jump very quickly back to the other question that you asked, I think there is also a funding issue, right? If I could fix three things, funding would be one of it. But we see that, like, I mean, all the US invested are in Europe and investing in European startups, right? They're all here. So capital is coming. And the question is, do we want more European capital investing? That, I think, is also one of the topics. But yeah, imagine 2035 and how would AI shape our lives in a surprising way? I think in 2035, the surprising thing will be how little we talk about AI, to be honest. Because by then it will be such general purpose technology that permeates our entire lives. Mm-hmm. It will be sort of the invisible technological layer that underpins our personal and professional lives. It will make things more seamless in a way where we won't necessarily think about it. Mm-hmm. Like how we take email for granted, our smartphones for granted, or even taking an Uber for granted. I think it will just be, I'm not sure we'll be having these discussions anymore. I think it'll just be totally native in our everyday life.
That would mean that it works successfully, right? That's, I'm really looking forward to it.
Me too. Me too.
Yeah. So, Nicole, what's the... Changing the narrative a bit, what's the worst AI-powered product you've ever seen? And what does it teach us about real value, you know, versus hype?
So I think, I'm not sure I want to name a company name here, but I think the worst type of, so the startups I'm not excited about as an investor are either targeted towards problems that I don't really think are that relevant, that are, let's say, more modern societal vanity topics. I don't know. I'm just not as excited as an investor about those things. I really am excited about healthcare, about creating alternative like materials, solving deep industrial topics, education. Like there's so many topics we can direct this technology towards. So I'm not interested in the next cat video or something like that. It's not really what I'm into. I think from a technology perspective, if you're building a product that you build in like a weekend or 2 months in your dorm room, like it's probably not very defensible. And it's probably not very deep. It's probably more a wrapper around existing models. And that also doesn't make me very excited because it probably means somebody else can build it in maybe 1 month in their dorm room as well. So the ideas I'm really interested in are more, are connecting or like end to end more and are deep in industrial, like have a carry a deep expertise as well. And we know startups don't always have these proprietary data sets day one, but they have innovative ways of creating those data sets or partnering with people with those data sets. And that's what I'm really excited about. So all these GPT wrappers.
Totally get you. It's more like rather noise, right? Like the other one. I mean, like I 100% agree. Like what excites me about AI is our topics like health tech. As you said, like my wife is, so she works for AstraZeneca. She's a senior director there in oncology department. She's dealing with clinical trials end to end. And like her goal in life is to eliminate cancer as a cause of death, which is always giving me goosebumps when I talk about it. And I really love it about her. And I wish actually AI would be able to support this kind of cases, you know, to help with clinical trials, help eliminate cancer. On the other hand, also I have, as I told you, Mia, my 4-year-old daughter, ever since she was born, it's more like, for me, even more than before, it's about what the world will look like, what the future will look like. And I want to help build a happier, better, and more sustainable future that she's going to be excited about living in. So then like I just direct my attention to climate change and how AI can help solve that. So definitely like a real world problems that we need solutions for, not the next cat video, as you said.
And I think you're hitting another really important part, just like beyond what we find interesting and what we think has purpose also, and what's technologically defensible and also makes for a good business model and a sustainable one, is also this, what's a real problem, right? I mean, I think it's a bit natural. You get a new toy and, you know, it's in the nature of technologists. They play with toys and they create this stuff. But eventually, like if you want to create a successful business, you need to solve a real problem, and somebody needs to be pay real money for that product because they feel it's a real problem. So I think that's something we've forgotten, and maybe that's also natural in this tech hype that people are just like, oh, this is exciting. I have a new toy. Let me play around with it. If it really solves a serious problem, like
true. Nicole, what's that? Since we're talking about the different industries and AI application to them, what was the single most underrated industry for AI disruption right now?
Oh, wow. I think AI for science is really interesting. So help creating faster advancements is something I'm really excited about, and I'm really trying to learn more about as an investor. So things like Lab in the Loop, where you basically have a bunch of agents design and manage a lot of the experimental process and sort of connecting that to real world labs, I think is very exciting. And it goes in a similar direction that you were talking about. You know, there are a lot of medical applications, a lot of material science applications and others that are, you know, biochemistry applications that are really interesting. I think there is like what's underrated. I think I recently read this report that the fraud industry, so online scams, has become bigger than the drug industry. So I was thinking, okay, we are directing a lot of public attention towards fixing this drug problem, and understandably so. I mean, there are a lot of people dying. It's a horrible situation, right? Some of these drugs, we see this and it's affecting real lives and really destroying people. I'm thinking, wow, what an imbalance towards sort of fixing online scams, right? You all know about these people like scamming grandparents or other people. It's like such a scumbag move. And I feel there is a lot of potential to get into that space and address that, because it's a really big problem. And I don't see as many startups focusing on this area yet, for example, right? And I think it's going to become really relevant. That's one of the topics. I think, you know, you were talking about drug discoveries. There's a lot of interesting things happening around bio and multi-omics data and sort of connecting these data sets and creating foundational models around them. Not sure it's so underrated, but I feel we're still only at the very beginning of creating the value with those models. So I think this is just like, it's just a start. So there's so much more to come, and very excited about it. Yeah, just for three areas.
Yeah, nice. Nicole, let's talk a bit about the like ethics dilemma, you know, like AI's power and responsibility. You advise governments on AI policy. What's a completely counterintuitive AI regulation that we should implement?
That's a good question. When I think about regulation, I feel there's always a complete desire to create safety, right, around everything. And fundamentally, to be honest, I'm not sure I agree with this. I think life is inherently risky. So that's why I'm not about this. I mean, what I'm thinking is, right, we're regulating humans otherwise in a lot of ways. We're also regulating other technologies. But also, I think we're not, how should I say, I think it's a question of benchmark sometimes. So people are not perfect either, right? We take all these decisions. We often cannot really rationally explain lots of these decisions. We know a lot of psychology books focus on bias and, you know, subconscious thoughts and like all these kind of things that we're not even aware in large parts that are guiding us and are actually guiding a lot of our decision-making as well in practice. And I think ultimately for me, and I'm not sure it's so counterintuitive, but the question is it useful to set technology to a much higher standard than humans, or where is it pragmatic to say, okay, actually, there are less accidents created by autonomous driving cars than by humans, or there are less errors made judging some of these cases, maybe even in the medical realm, because we're not perfect. So I think the standard that we set, and then there might be counterintuitive decisions that even though technology is better than humans, we still on a ethical or societal level say we don't want this. I don't know. Do you want to be judged by an AI judge, or do you want a real person to sit in front of you? That's a philosophical and ideological debate. And that's something we should carry out, in my opinion, in that realm. We should discuss these things as a society and then decide, do we want this or not? And in other areas, maybe just think a bit more pragmatically. But I'm not sure that's a very straight answer to your question.
It's not, but I like it. Listen, if AI could write law or laws, what was the first one it would pass and would we like it?
I don't know, but we should ask it. I mean, this sounds like we should do a live prompt, one of these conversational AI systems. But I think the lawmaking process, I mean, as I was discussing, this is one of the areas. This is a normative. And this is something, ultimately, I'm not sure we want to give AI. For sure, we need a lot of human in the loop. Because there's an aspect that's very technical about, let's say, translating what we want into a proper and good regulation. But the bit, what we want, that's why we have democracies. That's why we go voting, because people, they don't all agree on this. And it's not something that you can just give a system to completely implement. Those are things we have to debate. That's what we are humans for. That's because we care about the outcomes. We will suffer or enjoy these outcomes. AI won't care.
Nicole, changing the topic a bit, let's talk for a second about women in tech, or women in deep tech, maybe more specifically, and breaking the pattern. You know, you've built a career in deep tech. You know, a space still kind of heavily male dominated. What's one outdated piece of advice women in tech need to ignore?
So I think, and I think things are changing. When I started my career, a lot of the advice, a lot of the courses I was offered to do were around teaching me how to speak in a lower voice like a man, or dressing appropriately for business settings, right? So it was all about being like a man, kind of. That's what it felt like.
Sounds wrong.
That sounds like an interesting approach. I don't think I would take that advice back then or now, but it took me a while to understand that that's not the value add I have to be like a weird version of a guy.
Right.
And that's also, I think that's one thing. So I don't buy into that. And it's not just in the tech industry, but all these, like, I went to the same Ivy League universities that my peers went to. I enjoyed the same education. And I don't see why I need an extra course or special training to do the same job they're doing, above and beyond what they need, right? So if you want to offer it to everybody, go ahead. Mm. But that I don't believe.
Was there a moment in your career where you like kind of realized you had to break the rules to get ahead, or there was nothing like that?
There were many moments in my career where I think I was breaking the rules a little bit. So being more, I would call it something like the party crashing, a party crashing skill, sometimes quite literal when it was about high stakes parties and at important conferences. I would just sneak in and take my place and, hey, I fit it right in. So I don't think I was a distraction to that party. And I think that's the same for, it's the same for the business world in some ways. You need to take your place. I think at the end, you need to have a sort of excellence. You need to be really good at what you're doing. And then you need to sometimes make very bold proposals to people and say, hey, you know, I can, you're thinking about this the completely wrong way. I think you should be doing this. And this is my proposal. And I want to help you. And I'm actually also going to put my career on the line for it. I don't know if that's breaking the rules, but it's for sure situations where you need to stretch a lot. And
Nicole, I've been really enjoying this interview. Actually, I don't want to call it an interview. If it's an interview, I failed at this conversation. maybe some final thoughts about AI, humanity, and the road ahead. AI is often, you know, kind of painted as either our greatest hope or an existential risk. What's a third unexpected way you see AI redefining humanity?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, imagine it's the year 2000 and you're asking this question, but instead of AI, you ask it with the internet, which was also painted as both our greatest hope or an existential risk. And, and the internet drove a tremendous amount of value. It pushed humanity forward. It also gave rise to some, you know, threats and downsides across the world. I think it's not a clear picture always, but I would argue that the internet was a good thing for humanity and human progress. It democratized a lot of access to knowledge, right? And it's now such an integral part of our lives that it's impossible to imagine life without it. And I think the same will be true for AI. And I would even say, you know, for me, AI is like a big conundrum because, so I would call it like the renaissance of humanity. I think AI gives us the opportunity to rethink our relationship to work a little bit. I mean, it has been such a dream for humankind not to work. Mm-hmm. Back to Plato, to be basically, to focus on what it means to be a good person.
Yeah.
Right, the philosopher state.
Yeah.
And we've become very attached to work. And don't get me wrong, I love my work and I work probably way too much. But I'm just sort of wondering now that we're at a stage where we see, oh, some of these machines could be replacing what we're doing and then we could be people of leisure. Mm-hmm. Now we're all of a sudden so scared of it.
Yeah.
So this utopia has sort of turned into a dystopia. And I think this can give rise to a renaissance of humanity because it is challenging us much more to confront our own identity and our visions for societies and how we want to live and how we want to treat each other. And that should, in my opinion, really be center stage for our world and our society. And I'm really looking forward to that, to free some of the mental capacity from the dumb and dull and repetitive stuff and think about what actually matters.
Yeah,
I think it'd be such a chance for us to propel humankind forward. And if you think about, you know, the Renaissance back in Florence, mm-hmm. that was also time. There were huge technological paradigm shifts. Like the earth was flat back then in the minds of people. We thought, you know, the sun was turning around the earth. Like we didn't know so many things. And it was a time of both technological progress, but I would say arguably also one of the most dense times of progress for societies, democracy, right? Enlightenment, human-centered worldview, and so on. So I think this is a similar moment, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I love it. I love to say. Actually, I had just last week or 2 weeks ago, I had another guest on the podcast, Philippe Gonzera, who's founder and CEO of Wordware. Wordware is a company that builds AI agents and kind of empowers non-technical people to build their own AI stack and AI agents. And they recently graduated actually from YC, and they got like one of the biggest rounds in YC history before even graduating from the program. And we were having this conversation with him, and what we were talking about was this conversation about like what AI will mean to us and like how is it our greatest hope. And we talked about, you know, like how we think that knowledge workers will become creatives, and AI will kind of, what you just said, will give time back to people to focus on like things that actually are more meaningful to them than like doing their job. I mean, like doing your job can be meaningful to you too, but you know, I kind of give the time back to focus on more creative stuff, creative process. I don't know, your well-being, your family, and kind of rethink your, as you said, rethink your and redefine your connection to work and generally like to life as a construct, as constructed. So I really am looking forward to it, and I really love your take as well. And yeah, it's exciting times that we live in. And I really look forward to see how they unfold. You know, maybe to end it off with a fun exercise for you, you know, you can imagine, I mean, maybe you don't have to imagine, let's say you can train an AI on your own brain, right? And have it run a company for you. What kind of company would you build?
Well, wouldn't it build what I'm working on today if it's truly trained on my brain? So it would probably build an AI solution provider called Morantic Dimension if it's really well trained. Otherwise, I might not be listening to my brain. I don't know.
Right. Makes sense. Nicole, thanks so much for your time. It's been such a pleasure to have you on the show. I hope to meet you in person sometime. And thank you for being here with us. I think people will love the podcast. Talk to you soon and enjoy your day.
Thank you very much, Martin. Thank you.